What's going on, everybody? Cody Pasby back with you. Another episode of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks, Mojo Breaks Baseball Card Podcast. Opening weekend is now in the books. Did you have fun? I know I did. It was a good weekend. Rookie debuts were exciting. Bobby Witt Jr. set the baseball world, baseball card world on fire. And then some other guy took the shine from him in that very same series. Plus, I wanted to focus today on some veteran pitchers. I always say it, pitchers just don't get the love they deserve in the hobby. Where is the love, man, for some of these huge pitchers? I talked about those guys and much, much more with my guest this week, Mark Luino, but you know him better as Giraffe Neck Mark, one of the best channels for baseball content on YouTube. You're probably already watching his stuff, but now he's got a brand new channel about baseball cards, Giraffe Neck Cards, easy to remember. Talk to him about the new channel and his history with baseball cards, talked about those pitchers, and we did a very, 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 very early edition of Buy, Sell, or Hold after just a few games in the books, because, you know, we have to make some grand assumptions from three or four games, so we did just that. Here's my conversation with Mark. I do want to ask, what's your history with baseball cards? Were you collecting as a kid and then kind of got back into it over the last few years as things have just, you know, gone crazy in this community?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like most of us, I definitely was ripping packs when I was younger. I feel like I was a big fan of getting like the big Topps complete set every year instead of buying those packs. And the packs I ended up buying were mostly like basketball cards, honestly, like the LeBrons. I was such a big LeBron guy. I was dying to get his rookie card. So that was always what I was really opening packs for, but definitely always been a collector when I was younger. Middle school, high school days kind of took a little bit of a break. Didn't really have money to spend on that kind of stuff. And then now that I have a job and everything and I do YouTube and the pandemic, I didn't have money to spend on going out to bars. I was like, all right, let's buy some packs. Let's buy cards.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's the thing I've noticed, and even around here, it's like we're guys who like, hey, you finally get a little money, let's buy those things that you couldn't as kids, like you know, whether it be some nice shoes or some nice trading cards. In our case, it's the trading cards. So now you're doing this new venture, DraftNick Cards. Tell us a little bit about it. How did it get started? What's the future looking like for this channel? What are the expectations going forward?
Yeah, I'm taking, I think, a little bit of a different approach than what I've seen from most card channels. Now, of course, there definitely are a lot of guys that are like on the investment side of things, but that's really what got me back into the cards, is that there's an opportunity to make money. And for someone who knows baseball and doesn't know the stock market, this can kind of be my stock market in a way. Yeah. And I'm a lot more educated on it. So I feel a lot more comfortable putting $1,000 into a card of a player that I think is going to be really good, because I think he has the stuff, as opposed to, you know, some random stock or whatever it's going to be. So for me, my goal over there is, one, like, I'm having fun with it. Just trying to make some entertaining videos. Hopefully people can make money based on the things that I'm telling them as well, because I think that would be a really cool way to get the community going. But I was opening packs of cards. I was buying so many cards. I was flipping cards. I figured, why not create it into content and just have another avenue that I can be creative with? That's kind of like my fun little side project right now. And obviously Giraffe Nick Mark's my job. So it's nice to have a little outlet.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun. I mean, I was watching the first couple of videos. It's great stuff. Like I said, before we started rolling here, like definitely coming in, and it sounded like you know your stuff, and it's great to have someone coming into the community. Look, and I'll even say, like, I was into trading cards as a kid, got back into it over the last couple of years. So I even had that feeling of like, I felt like an outsider coming in, but obviously, like, you're coming in obviously with the baseball pedigree and the YouTube, the following on YouTube already, and it's fun to watch. I actually have a box of Update Sapphire coming oh, soon, nice. And I saw your rip, and I was like, okay, I think I could deal with that. Obviously, I want to get a Kelenic. That's the only reason I got it.
Yeah,
just to make sure. Maybe I'll hold it, but that's no fun. It's like, it's no fun to just hold that sealed box up in a closet for 10 years, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, like, it's off camera right now based on where it's at, but I have about like 12 boxes of Bowman Chrome from the past year, and Bowman Draft sit behind me. Those I'll sit on. For me, like, Topps, like, Sapphire Update, I was like, that's a fun rip for me. Try to get a Kelenic, try to get an India, maybe a good autograph here or there, and see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, solid choice on the sitting on those drafts, especially that Bowman draft from last year. I feel like was like super loaded. There's so many huge names in there.
You know what's funny is I had so many conversations with different people in the card community, and I was getting killed. I was getting killed when it first came out, saying that I think that this box was so awesome because I know it was like it was pitcher heavy per se, but the hitters were big hitters. I mean, I got super lucky in one of the boxes I opened. I had a Marcelo Meyer Sparkle autograph. I did pretty well.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad at all. That's the thing is it's like you got Meyer that alone, like a top Red Sox prospect's going to be, you know, I think he's coming up as a shortstop, but we'll be a middle infielder. Like you get a guy on a big team in a big market, already a top 15, 20 prospect. I'm like, that's enough. Yeah. To make that box a worthy investment, frankly. And then you know, on top of it, you've got Henry Davis, Jordan Lawler as well. Like, there's
it's loaded.
It's loaded. It's totally loaded. Yeah, you're right. People were totally sleeping on it to begin with. Let's actually talk about some of your cards in your PC. I know I gave you a little bit of homework, said let's show it off. You got some big ones in the PC. I know you're a Mets fan, so I'm assuming a lot of Mets in that personal collection.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually got a Piazza. I finally got a Piazza, nice. PSA 10 rookie. That's just, he's my favorite player of all time. I figured I had to get one of his. And it's the Dodgers card. I don't remember exactly what the set is, but he's catching behind it. That's one of my favorite ones. And then I just like, I'm more of a, for my PC, definitely like more sentimental than like actually necessarily like players I think are particularly good. So there's a kid on the Houston Astros that I played with in high school, Brandon Belak. So I got one of his autograph cards, got a couple of his. Yermin Mercedes was like a fun meme for me. Same thing with Jabari Blash. So I have a couple of their cards from when I played MLB The Show. And then like even like a Ja Morant card, I think it came from Chronicles. It had Young Dolph in the background, and I know he died past year. So that was like, I'm a big Young Dolph fan. So I was like, that's really cool. Grab that one. PC, I'm still trying to work to build more, but for me, I'm like, they'll always be there, and I feel like I'll just be able to get the guys that I want at any point. So I'm not in any rush. I'm more so putting my money right now towards the cards I think will eventually make me more.
That's probably the smart investment. Yeah, it's get those guys on the low end because, those small players. You know what? I'll throw a guy out that I think we both share probably a kinship for, a former Met and Giant. I'm a Giants fan. Tsuyoshi Shinjo. It's a guy I like to collect some of his cards because I
love Shinjo.
Who doesn't love Shinjo? I just got to say real quick, I am absolutely obsessed with Shinjo right now as the manager over in Japan, wearing the leisure suit, coming in on the hovercraft, and it just makes me so happy to see the man living his best life. So just a little aside.
He's having fun. I remember my uncle like happened to meet him once and got a like signed baseball by him. So I have a Shinjo signed autograph back at my parents' house. And I'm like, I'll never forget him. I'll never forget him.
Never. Absolutely never. DH for the Giants of the 02 World Series. So, they got to the World Series, so I guess I can't complain. But anyway, don't need to talk about that World Series. Let's talk about it's only been 3 games into the season. It's hard to make any grand assessments. We will do that a little later. We will make big grand sweeping assessments after 3 games, 4 games for some teams because that's what we do. But I want to focus on pitching, because I said it, you're a Mets fan, and I feel like the Mets this year are loaded with pitching, obviously when healthy. Unfortunately for, I know I might be a sore subject bringing up Jacob DeGrom right now, but when they are healthy, this is going to be probably the best, if not one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball. But if there's one thing we know as baseball card collectors, pitchers just don't do that well. And I think it's one, I think it's a shame because I think there's a lot of great guys who deserve more recognition. And it's like, are you going to spend $2,000-$3,000 on a prospect you've never heard of, or spend less than that and get, I don't know, Clayton Kershaw or some future Hall of Fame pitcher? So I want to play a little game here where we're going to talk about 5 guys that I think are either future Hall of Famers or borderline Hall of Famers, and if they're a worthy investment for adding to the collection. I got some little prices here, some research, thanks to our good friends over at Card Ladder. The first guy I want to bring up is Max Scherzer, who made his debut this weekend for the Mets. Looked impressive. Also came out no sentimentality. I liked it. Just everybody in Washington on their feet. Hey, thanks for the World Series. Thanks for Cy Youngs. Nope, right back at it. I think he like almost like quick pitched the audience, I felt like, in that game where they were like trying to let him like, hey, acknowledge us. Like,
take the moment a little bit.
Yeah. Nope. I'm a Met now. We cannot be friends for at least until I hang up the cleats. Like, we can't be friends. His PSA 10 base rookie card, last I saw, sold for about $492.22 back on April 10th. Guy's a future Hall of Famer. His price, I think, compared to some of these guys we're going to talk about, obviously it's not like a bargain here, but compared to what he has done in his career, I think if there's the guy you look at is like, oh, this is a guy for pitchers to invest in, Max Scherzer to me, about as safe a bet as possible. What do you think? You buying Max Scherzer a rookie card around that price right now, considering what he's going to be, a future Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I'm buying him. That's a pretty easy buy for me. Like you said, he's a guaranteed Hall of Famer. He's a three-time Cy Young Award winner. He's still got stuff left in the tank. So the numbers are only going to continue to improve, and his Hall of Fame, you know, pedigree is only going to get stronger and stronger as we go. $500 for a guy who's a guaranteed Hall of Famer, at least in my eyes, is seemingly no-brainer. You can't talk about the 2010s and not mention Max Scherzer. He is number one or number two best pitchers of this generation. You got to, that's a definitely buy.
Yeah, I think part of the value there too is that he came on so late that I think there's a lot of people who still haven't really, I think in the collector's world, I should say, baseball fans know what they're seeing with Scherzer. But I think that it is a little bit of like, he was such a late bloomer that maybe we're forgetting, like, no, he's done enough this last 10 years to lock himself into Cooperstown, no matter what he does going forward. By the way, in Washington this weekend, I'll talk about your Mets a little bit. I feel like I was watching highlights and watching the games, watching recaps, and it was just a lot of stress this weekend. Like the benches were clearing, and obviously opening day it was weird to be like, Tyler McGill is just starting opening day. What's going on here? And yet I think the Mets looked as good as any team in baseball this week, and they were pretty dominant in Washington, other than that comeback yesterday and against Washington.
You know, I felt really good about what I saw. You know, you're going to get the opening day growing pains, and of course we want to see Jacob DeGrom on the mound, but Tyler McGill was awesome. He was so good, and that's like a guy I'm going to keep a close eye on too. Like, if he's throwing 98 like he was, and he has that slider and changeup, like, he's going to be a very, very strong pitcher. And then, like, Scherzer, go figure, like, he had the worst start of all the Mets players, which is so funny. He gave up 3 runs, but, like, Bassett, Carrasco, like, whatever it was, everyone pitched well, everyone played well. They didn't get the sweep. It's a bittersweet way to end the series, but as a Mets fan, I'll never complain about 3 or 4.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I think pretty dominant from the starting staff. I think you got a taste that even without DeGrom right now, this team is going to be okay. The starting staff, they're so deep pitching wise, and obviously it looks like the offense is finally starting to come around for that team. And also back on McGill, just looking from him from a hobby perspective, if you're looking for like a dark horse, I feel like the Mets are one of those teams where starting pitchers, I think, tend to do better there for trading cards and just for popularity. I mean, when guys pop, like, there's a long lineage, I don't have to tell you, of guys, you know, who Dwight Gooden and Matt Harvey, these guys who pop and become these overnight superstar sensations. Who's to say that Tyler McGill is not that next guy? I know it's only one start, but the stuff was for real.
Stuff's for real. And what I love about him too is he's got that confidence and cockiness that he can become a star as long as the performance is still there, being in New York. Like, you mentioned Matt Harvey, like, I don't think they're the same type pitcher, but I think the idea of like Tyler McGill's like, give me the ball, I'm gonna shove it down your throat, is the same way that Matt Harvey came up and keeps pitching like this. Like you said, I mean, he's like free. His cards are free right now. Like, just take a look at him.
Yeah, exactly. It crazier things have happened. I don't think it'd be a bad investment at all. The guy could stick around in the rotation if he plays his cards right. Speaking of a guy who's stuck around in the rotation for almost 15 years now, here on the West Coast, we know him as Clayton Kershaw. He's a guy that has tormented my Giants for many, many years and is going to the Hall of Fame, I think, no matter what happens. All these guys I'm going to talk about are all, like, other than Scherzer, Scherzer's in that $500 range or more. Everybody else I'm going to talk about is like under $200 or around there for a lot of their PSA 10 rookie cards. Clayton Kershaw, I just looked, his PSA 10 base rookie, the same exact set, by the way, as Max Scherzer's, the 08 update, sold for just under $1,200 recently. Wow. That, man, it, look, and I think he's a phenomenal pitcher and one of the best we've ever seen in this generation. $1,200 though for a PSA 10 rookie of Clayton Kershaw. A little steep, I feel like, even considering what he is and how good he is, but compared to some of these other guys, I think maybe a little bit on the high end.
Yeah, the thing that is interesting about Clayton Kershaw is we're in this weird time right now where I feel like he's kind of underappreciated because he's a few years away from being that insane pitcher that he was. But when you look back at his prime, he's going to go down as one of the top 10 pitchers, maybe even top five of all time, I think. And especially from the left-hand side, he has a chance to be one of the best to ever do it. So I think he's someone that probably could go up, but it's going to be a long way from now. It's going to be when, you know, me and you are getting a little bit older here and we're like, remember Clayton Kershaw? Remember how great he was? One of the greatest pitchers of all time. Like, he's someone who probably needs a little more appreciation in terms of his actual skill and to get further away from what he's like now, because you forget how good he once was. But yeah, 1200 right now, you could buy like two Max Scherzer cards right there.
Exactly. That's what it feels like. It's just like, this whole segment is about, hey man, let's give respect to the pitchers, but Kershaw is pretty steep. Now you could make the argument that like, he is kind of, for the Dodgers, sort of an heir apparent to a pitching figure like Sandy Koufax. And yep. Koufax's cards kind of defy the pitcher expectations, because obviously those vintage cards are incredible. It's some of the most iconic designs we've ever seen. So you could make that argument that is why that price point is justifiable for Clayton Kershaw. But yeah, I think you're right. I think we're seeing with like Albert Pujols right now in the card market, where his stuff is suddenly starting to go back up. I think people are finally appreciating after so many years in Anaheim where things just did not work out. We're finally having the late career appreciation of Albert Pujols. So maybe the same thing here happens for Kershaw. And you know what? Kershaw's still good. That's the other thing.
He's probably got like 5 or 6 years left too. He's like not old by any means.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's every time I think we say this is it, this is the end of Clayton Kershaw as an ace pitcher, he's still at least the third guy in that rotation, and I think on a good day is the second guy in that Dodger rotation with Walker Buehler, Luis Urias. Saying those names just gave me a shiver down my spine when the Giants have to play them in about a month's time, but I'll worry about that in a month's time. Speaking of a guy who's a former Dodger, this is the guy I think is the most underrated. And I think another guy that maybe gets that late career bump, Zach Greinke, kind of a borderline Hall of Famer. I think he will get into the Hall of Fame. I think that you look at the track record, you look at what he's done in both leagues. It's hard to argue that this guy isn't deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. His stuff is real cheap right now. It's a little harder to come by his stuff, but I think a 2002 PSA 8 Bowman Chrome sold for about $185. That's the highest sale I could find of any of his stuff. Real cheap. And I think he's maybe of all these guys is the strongest buy if you're looking to invest in like into some future Hall of Fame pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about appreciating someone like later. We've been seeing Zach Greinke be a different pitcher than he was when he was winning Cy Young's out in Kansas City. Like, people forget he threw like high 90s and he had some of the nastiest stuff. Like, now he's a different pitcher. He tries to get late into games. Like, that's not his job anymore. He's not going to be able to pump 99 late in the game. So you watch him pitch now and you don't think Hall of Famer because of how he pitches at this moment. But you look at his whole career as a whole, I'm with you. I think he's definitely a Hall of Famer. And at that, I mean, like you said, that's the highest price you could find. I feel like there's, I don't want to say no risk. There's always risk, and it depends what your budget is. But if you're spending money on these cards like that, I think Zach Greinke's worth it. The thing is, he's just like he's a small market player, kind of. Yeah. Kansas City is like the team that definitely you always are going to associate with him the most, and especially during his prime. So that might be tough. But then the Royals, it is a baseball city. Like, that's Kansas City is a baseball city, and he did have the Astros and the Dodgers sprinkled in there. So I like that price. I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah, and I think too, I think you're seeing a bit of a maybe him going back to the Royals, and also the timing with Bobby Witt Jr. being there. And I mean, he's as hot a prospect for collectors and as big a name, I think, storyline for really just baseball in general this year. Looked good. I think he got another hit today before got on the air. So he looks like the real deal early on, but that maybe helps out a little bit. But I think you pointed to it. he's also bounced around so much that I think it's tough for collectors to get as interested when it's a guy who, what, let's see if we can do this. The Royals, the Astros, the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers,
Brewers were in there.
The
Angels were in there for, yep, I think half a season as well. Like he's bounced around quite a bit for a guy who, like we said, like is a Hall of Fame pitcher. Probably it's weird to say out loud, but, never like one of those. He had the Dodgers for that little sprinkle. That's kind of the biggest one you can think of.
Yeah, exactly. Where he was, I mean, other than those years at Kansas City, I think the best he ever was with, yeah, those Dodger teams. That year where he was I think he broke the single season ERA record or got close to it. Just absolutely phenomenal that year. But yeah, I think he's still, I think he's strong by. I think hopefully we've convinced some people. I think it was a pretty convincing argument for Greinke. The guy's been so good. And maybe it's the personality too. Turns people off.
I think him being quiet and not being a star, like even if he won 3 Cy Young awards, Max Scherzer is going to get the shine over him just because Max Scherzer is a psychopath and everybody's like, I want that guy. Where's Zach Greinke? He's quiet. He hasn't talked to anybody. He keeps to himself.
Right. Yeah. But I before I lose this thought, if we're likening Greinke's career here or second half of his career to another player, I'm thinking Vince Carter in the NBA, where like clearly he lost, ooh, a step, but he understood what he was now, reevaluated, reconfigured his game, and continued to be successful. And I think because of that, makes his career longer, and I think locks up a Hall of Fame spot when maybe it was kind of on the bubble. I think Greinke is maybe the MLB version of Vince Carter.
I kind of like that, yeah, because he had an explosive start. Like it's hard, like you said with Vince Carter, like it would be hard to see him play these last couple years and be like, I can't believe he was doing 360 windmill dunks. But like, yeah, that's kind of the same with Zach Greinke, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball at his prime.
Yeah, exactly. All right, one more guy, or actually two more guys we're going to talk about. Justin Verlander, who I think is actually one of these guys who sells really well. I think I said most, yeah, of these guys are under. Verlander is a guy who does sell really well, and rightfully so. I mean, MVP, Cy Young guy. And I think, too, he might be a guy that if you're holding on to some of his cards, I think his a Bowman or Topps Chrome first year auto PSA 10 sold for just under about $1,200 recently. But a lot of his base rookie stuff is still pretty affordable. His first year stuff, I've got a first year in a shoebox somewhere. It's not going to grade very well, but it's there and I want to hang on to it just as a little keepsake. But I think his low end stuff is going to go up because of this comeback year he's going to have. And I think he feels like he's, what is he, 38, 39 years old now. I think he thinks, yeah, he feels like he's got a left in the tank. And we've seen so many like the comebacks after we thought, well, it's over. That first act of his career was nice, but now it's over for Verlander, and then comes back and is better than ever. We're in the third act now, and I don't doubt him. And I feel like if you're looking to get his low end stuff, I think there are a lot worse investments to make for baseball cards.
Yeah, no, I think it's very much similar to like what we've been talking about with Greinke and Kershaw too. Like another guy you're going to look back at his career, and he does have like that weird middle part where he was just kind of okay for like, it's not even that long. It's like three years or so.
Right.
But he was so dominant on either end of that I don't care. I mean, you go through your growing pains. Instead of doing that as a rookie, he did in the middle of his career. So like, what does that actually matter in the terms of his Hall of Fame, you know, pedigree by any means? He's a stud. He's one of my favorite pitchers of all time. The guys you mentioned outside of Greinke, I don't think he's like necessarily generational, but like Verlander, Kershaw, Scherzer, they're the generational pitchers right now. This, yep, you know, the 2010s, early 2000s or late 2000s. I put him in that same group. I really like him a lot.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think the one guy where I think Kershaw and him are the prices are totally justifiable. I know it's, again, on the higher end, but I think, again, the point is you're looking at these guys versus these top prospects who have no experience, and yeah, maybe a little wiser investment. Last guy I want to talk about is Jacob DeGrom, who, yeah, I think is kind of the most interesting guy on the list, because I think for pitchers, there was a moment at the peak when he was just the best in baseball. I mean, when he's healthy, he is the best in baseball. There's no question about it. The injuries have become a problem, unfortunately. It's really a shame. But at his absolute peak, he was selling like any position player was, I think. He was at that top of the mountaintop for collectors, because I think everyone was in, and I was in. Everybody was, it was phenomenal. Everybody paused, everybody stopped what they were doing to make sure to watch the Jacob deGrom starts. Right now, his PSA 10 2014 Topps Update rookie is sold for, last sale I could find, April 10th, about $212 for that rookie. He's going to be out for a little while. Where are we with Jacob deGrom? How do you feel about his future here? What does he need to make that leap into this conversation with the four guys that we've already mentioned?
Yeah, I think getting a third Cy Young would be really, really big. I think that would really elevate him, even though he's basically been a Cy Young the last 2 years. Even Bauer and Burns won it. We know the years that he had, he was great, but he didn't get it. And the longevity, he needs to pitch till he's like 40, and then it gets really, really, really interesting, because what do you do with a guy who really popped off for like 6-7 year span, but was so incredibly disgustingly good that you can't really compare him to anybody else besides the greats like Pedro Martinez, Bob Gibson, like those kind of names. So it's really hard. And I think you agree with me on this. Like, it's definitely the riskiest one. Mm-hmm. But as long as his shoulder, I think, looks good whenever he does come back this year, I would take that risk on 200, because he could get into that level of being that, you know, $500,000 card. So, like, it's risky. You want to take a better risk on some other guys, I think that's fair. But if you really do trust it, Jacob deGrom, when you watch this guy pitch, you go, this is a Hall of Famer. Like, I think you should back him. I have a couple of his rookie cards, so I'm definitely invested in him if you want to hear my personal opinions on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing, too, is he could come back midseason and have that stretch where he just looks dominant and unbelievable. This is probably the best Mets team he has been a part of since that World Series year. And if he can have that second half resurgence and lead this team deep into the playoffs, really is where you're going to see this. The value is going to just skyrocket for his stuff, I think, along with a lot of other guys on the team. But I think especially, I think he's the guy who would be the biggest benefactor for baseball cards. And I just personally I just want to see this guy pitch, man. I got the feeling of like last year with Mike Trout, where it was just like, I don't care what team he's on. I don't care about any of that. I just want to see the guy play. It felt so good to see Trout knock one out this weekend.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, too, is it's like I actually like was deflated watching some of those. I was watching a lot of Angels this weekend, and like just the feeling of just being deflated every time, like he hit one long and deep. And there was, I think, at least one that got stolen, one that was that was pretty close to the warning track. It's like, come on, man. Astros, give it a break, man. Nobody wants to see you do this. Everyone wants to see Mike Trout. Come on.
Yeah, no, he's unbelievable. He's just, as long as he can stay healthy, sky's the limit. We know it. He'll be the greatest baseball player of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to see it. We need to see him and Shohei do it together. Which that kind of leads me into the next topic. There's a guy on the Angels I did want to talk about. As you know, what when it comes to sports podcasting and all this, look, it's only 3-4 games into the season, but we have to overreact. We have to make grand assessments over very small, short sample sizes. So let's do that. Every week we're going to do this after the weekend of baseball, the week of baseball, buy, sell, or hold, real simple. And we're calling this Overreaction Monday because, again, we should not be doing this, but let's do it. Hell, why not? The biggest story of the weekend in Kansas City. Unfortunately, I'm stealing Foolish Baseball Bailey's bit here, but the biggest story of the weekend, Stephen Kwan of the Cleveland Guardians. Bobby Witt Jr., hey, take a back seat, buddy, because the guy went 8-for-10 in his first three games. He got on base again today.
Yep.
The last I saw, 12 times on base to start his career. Absolutely nuts. Nobody in the world saw this coming. And so much so that nobody in the baseball card world saw this coming, because for the life of me, I searched and I searched, thought there's got to be something, right? There's got to be like a Bowman prospect card. There is nothing with Stephen Kwan. The only thing I could find is the Lynchburg Hillcats card giveaway. And somebody clearly waited in the parking lot after the game,
got his autograph and has an on-card auto of Stephen Kwan from the Lynchburg Hillcats card giveaway. Went for $165 on eBay recently, which now sounds like the steal of the century.
Wow. You won't catch me buying a Stephen Kwan autograph for $165. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, maybe a little bit of feeling good after that 8-for-10 start. I'm genuinely shocked. There's nothing. Maybe his rookie cards have a bump up. If again, this is being really thinking early on this one. But I guess I'd liken this to like Akil Badu last year, where he came on so strong. Really, really early on in the season, it took a huge bump in his trading card value. Everything settled, but he ended up having a nice year for Detroit. Yeah. That's the best case scenario for Stephen Kwan.
Yeah, I think with Kwan, he's going to have like that weird scenario of like he has the crazy hype right now, and he's probably always going to be a really solid player. He's just never going to be the best player in Cleveland even, so that's really tough. But he's got the hype. If you have anything Stephen Kwan, I'm selling it immediately. I love selling on the hype. I'm sure you do too. Even my Tyler McGill cards, I'm like, all right, I could sell a couple of these. I'll get them back in a couple of weeks. Like, you just had a great opening day start. If you have anything Stephen Kwan, I think you'd be foolish to hold on to it just because he's never even going to be the best guy on his own team. PC guy. That's how I see him.
Yeah. Anybody listening in Lynchburg, if you went to that game, go into your closets, go into your shelves and your shoe boxes. Find it now. You're going to sell a small, like something that was probably made for 3 cents for $50 right now. So yeah, get those Stephen Kwans out of your shoe box right now. All right. Let's talk about a guy that I think was a little more hype behind him. That'd be Jeremy Peña of the Houston Astros. One of my favorite moments of the weekend, by the way, his parents in the stands. I think it was Friday night. They're interviewing him on TV, and lo and behold, it's like he knew. He hits the home run right on TV with his parents getting it. It was one of the best reactions of the weekend, and he had a great weekend overall. 6-for-16, a home run, 2 runs against the Angels. Came into the year as Baseball Prospectus's 16th best prospect. He was in the top 100. For Baseball America, PSA Chrome Base Auto, PSA 10, sold for $300 recently. He's a guy that clearly, I think a lot of Astros fans wanted to see Carlos Correa back, understandably so. The guy just crushed like the craziest looking home run I've seen since that ballpark opened at Target Field. That was Nelson Cruz territory right there.
Yeah, I didn't think anyone was going to hit one further than Buxton this weekend, and Correa was like, oh, hold on, hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. And then Buxton hit those two that just sneak over the fence too. Yeah, that team was they were firing all the cylinders on Sunday. But Jeremy Peña, how are we feeling about him? Buying, selling, holding on Jeremy Peña's stuff right now.
So I think he was, I know he was someone I actually looked deep into this offseason. During the lockout, I was going deep into this. And Jeremy Peña was a guy who put on a lot of weight last year. It didn't show in his numbers, but his neck like grew like 6 inches or whatever it is. He's built like a tank. So I think the production is legit. I think he's going to be really good. I saw the cards going for like 75 to 100 when I was looking at them back in like December and January-ish time before obviously the Correa news with him leaving. If I bought them at that price, I'm selling at 300 just because I think that's probably a little bit of opening day hype right now. But I do think that Jeremy Peña at the right deal can be a very good player. Obviously shortstops loaded at the major league level, and it's only going to get crazier because now we have Bobby Witt Jr. We have all these other guys that are going to be coming up and sprinkling their way in here. But I really do think, like, at a basis level, he's a very, very good player. But at the $300 price, I'm selling if I have any. I'm not holding much past that.
Yeah, and I think the thing to remember too, and we talked about it on our first episode of the podcast here, but it's the Houston Astros. There's just something lingering over them that says cloud hanging over them. I don't know why. There's just this weird cloud hanging over them of negativity. You know, it's something might have happened in the World Series a few years ago.
Maybe.
Anyway, trash cans and whatnot. But there is something hanging over them in the hobby community where you wear that uniform and your value just isn't where it probably should be for certain players. If he was on I mean, because it was a huge, that was a huge moment. He had a great weekend. He's playing a premium position. Yep. If he was doing that, let's say on the Yankees, if that exact scenario happened this weekend and he's in New York on the Yankees, his stuff would be going through the roof right now. For that, it's like, yes, it's a little high, but you know, part of me is kind of like, maybe the stink finally goes away. And it should, because there's guys like him and Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez who are really great players who had nothing to do with what happened in 2017. So maybe give it a couple of years, and these guys, once they prove they can do it without the help of video replay and stuff like that, maybe not such a bad investment to get in on some Astros.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it really does depend what you bought in on him for. Because, like, I think 300 is a tough sell for me, and it's probably a tough sell for a lot of people. It's a lot of money. And if you're trying to sell him, I'm like, okay, what could that 300 then go towards? Something we mentioned earlier. And I'm like, all right, there's a lot of really good prospects that probably have a higher ceiling, maybe a lower floor too, but a higher ceiling for sure that I would rather than put that 300 into. It's how I'm always looking at it. I mean, you saw that from the first video on the Card Channel, trying to make those investments, trying to make those flips for me. So for me, that would be an easy flip in my eyes. But like, if you held on to him, I don't think you're stupid by any means, because he's really good.
Yeah, very good player, great team, great scenario to be in. So Jeremy Pena, a fun story to start the season, and probably the most fun I had watching this, one of the most funs I had, Hunter Green on Sunday against the Braves. Kind of goes with our theme here. We're talking pitchers. But man, he looked filthy. He is one of those, also those rare pitchers. I think it's because of the hype coming in. I believe he was expected. There were some whispers he might be a two-way guy for a while.
Yeah,
not mistaken.
Yeah, he got on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a high schooler, which that doesn't happen for high school baseball players. No. They called him the next LeBron of baseball, which is quite the remarks to give a kid, because he was throwing 102 and hitting 400-foot home runs. Now, I don't think he's going to do two-way. I think he's very much committed to just being a pitcher.
Yeah.
But he still throws 103 miles an hour, and he dominated the Braves, the World Series champion. So he opened a lot of eyes, because I think a lot of people expected that to go a completely different way. Not because he's not good, it's just you're playing the Braves.
Yeah, exactly. Playing the Braves. The Reds clearly went in a different direction this offseason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they kind of snuck up on everybody this week, and having a good outing, good showing in Atlanta. And he right at the top. I think I read somewhere, I think it was on MLB.com, that he threw 20 pitches over triple digits in his MLB debut.
Yeah.
7 Ks in 5 innings. His price is pretty high. Although I think now this is a refractor number to 499, and it is an auto 691 PSA. It's pretty high for a pitcher. He's kind of one I'm really on the fence on. I'm not buying because I think it's pretty tough right now. But maybe I'm selling on him right now just because it's hard to get much higher than this first start hype after beating the world champions on the road, throwing absolute nails, just throwing darts. And and he became one of the big stories of Sunday. So it kind of feels like a sell for me right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on the sell. And it's not, again, like it's going to sound like a broken record, but it's nothing against the quality of player he is, because I think Hunter Green's like going to be an ace in the making. He's still so young. He still has such great stuff. But he also has this weird kind of paradox where he plays in Cincinnati half the year. There's just going to be games where he gets absolutely shelled. And that's probably going to hurt his value, because he's just going to give up 8 runs one game and his ERA is going to be 5. And that's going to happen. And you're going to go, oh, this guy, I wasted all this money on him. So I definitely wouldn't be buying at this price. But then he also gets to play against the Pirates all the time. And he gets to play against, you know, gets to play in St. Louis. They're good, but it's a huge ballpark. Like, he's going to have these things that definitely even it out. But like you said, at $690, $700 right now, I can't buy. You want to hold it? I don't even know if I do that.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough with a pitcher, especially in his rookie year, but he will be good later down the line. So I can see why someone would be very optimistic.
And he's electric. He showed it on Sunday. And I think that there are probably, I'm sure there are probably some collectors listening who probably invested in him pretty heavily to start. He was a really, really hot prospect to begin with. It feels like, I mean, in baseball card terms, 3-4 years might as well be 40 years. It feels like an eternity at times. And it has been a while since it feels like, I think a lot of collectors are thinking, finally, he's here. But again, he's 22 years old. It's still so early in his career. But I bet there are are a lot of collectors who invested pretty heavily on him. So maybe even looking at that price, they're thinking, I still got to hold because I think there's still value to be gained here. And there certainly is with Hunter Green and the talent level that he's got there.
He's got the superstar factor too going on. I mean, like, exactly. Again, being called the LeBron of baseball as a high schooler, that's like crazy stuff. You don't see that. When's the last time you heard a high school baseball player be talked about? It was Bryce Harper before that. Like, it's pretty crazy for a pitcher.
Yeah, exactly. For a pitcher, too. I mean, I cannot even remember the last time. I mean, this is kind of Strasburg is what we're dealing with here, which Strasburg kind of the last guy, I think, for baseball card collecting that really hit for a lot of guys. It was a huge chase in his rookie year and Bowman years. So kind of has that similar vibe. And I mean, a debut that was not quite the Strasburg level debut, but... Yeah, it's going to be hard to top that. But you know what? Also not too bad, considering what he did and who he did it against. A couple more guys I want to talk about. Another guy who was a rookie last year. Actually, two guys. We can kind of talk about them both in tandem on opposite sides of the spectrum here. First is Andrew Vaughn, who Vaughn kind of was in that, 2021 rookies last year.
Yeah.
Where I see you cracking your fingers like, oh, yeah, let's go.
You got me excited, man. Andrew Vaughn hits me different.
I got you in your zone right now, the Andrew Vaughn zone, because, man, he looked good. He looked really good in Detroit this weekend. Leads the league in RBIs after three, four games with six of them. He had two home runs. One was pretty impressive on, I believe it was Saturday. He had a big home run. And a guy who's in a lineup with so many good hitters where the pressure is not on him right now to perform. It's on Luis Robert. It's on Jose Abreu. It's on Tim Anderson. It's on those guys. So maybe a little more relaxed at the plate, another year under his belt. And again, 2021 rookie kind of is on the lower end of those rookies. Meanwhile, the guy on the higher end of those rookies, Joe Adell, tough start. I've been going hard on Joe Adell, as in I like Joe Adell a lot, and I still think his stuff is really undervalued compared to a lot of these top prospects, and I think he's almost a better buy than some of these top prospects getting called up. Joe Madden is a great manager. I think he is doing him a disservice right now by, after that first game where it was as bad a debut as I've seen, where that offline throw looked really nervous at the plate. Some people were kind of giving him guff about, I think there was the Bregman home run where you should have leaped for it. It's like, man, if he makes that catch, it's the catch of the year. It's one of the catches of the year.
Relax, so, everybody. Yeah,
exactly. You go and do that in a major league game. But then to bench him for two straight days, and I know part of that is the matchups, but man, I just want this guy to get 500, 550 at-bats, show what he's got. If he doesn't have it, then hey, we tried. But give this guy a chance. So if you can't tell, I'm still saying bye, Joe Adell. But let's start with Andrew Vaughn. Where are we at with Andrew Vaughn? I want to say the last I saw his stuff, I think, is still at a place where I'd feel really comfortable buying his first Bowman Chrome Base Auto, PSA 10, $206. Yeah. I think that's a solid buy.
Yeah, no, I really like Andrew Vaughn. He was a guy that I was actually preparing to make a video on my main channel about breakout hitters. And Andrew Vaughn was a top of the list. And part of the video was also going to include I wasn't talking about necessarily Bowman Chrome Autos. I was just going to be talking about like his base, Bowman First. And I think it's like $20, $30. And I was like, I know base, man, the value isn't as good as it was like during the hype of the pandemic, but $20, $30 for a guy who was like going to be a really good hitter for probably 10 plus years. I always like called him like the poor man's Pete Alonso a little bit. He does hits for average a little bit better, not as good power, like relatively similar. I love Andrew Vaughn. I'm buying his cards. I think he's really, really good. I have a card coming in the mail. I'm waiting for it to get here. Like, he's nice. A guy that I'm personally invested in. I think you should be personally invested in. I feel like at the price point, it's going to at least hover there for the next few years. It can only go up, I think, right now. I don't see a place where he falls off a cliff and stinks and all of a sudden is bad. He's just too talented not to. He's been talented from college all the way till now. I'm such a big Andrew Vaughn guy, and I'm so happy you brought him up because he gets no love.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not, you know, and I'll be honest, I think I forgot about him. I was so caught up in from last year, Alec Bohm and Dylan Carlson, Joey Bart, Joe Adele. These guys, I think I kind of crowned them as like, okay, these are the key rookies. Jazz Chisholm, I throw him in there as well. These are the key rookies to be following. And Andrew Vaughn very quickly became an afterthought, even though he 15 home runs and about 400 plus plate appearances last year. So the power was there. He just needed a little time. Clearly, I would love to see it work. And I think maybe too, the rise of Yermín Mercedes, the rise and fall, unfortunately, for Yermín Mercedes kind of stunted his season last year, where I think they were like, well, this guy's working, so let's go all in on this guy. And I think it might have cost Vaughn a few at bats to start the season, so he didn't get into that groove. But man, he just looks like the real deal right now. Very, very excited for him and what he can do in that lineup. And like I said, yeah, I like the price. I'm a guy who I will go after the Topps Chrome rookies. And yeah, his stuff is like way, way undervalued right now. So totally in agreement. I'm a big buyer on Vaughn. How do you feel about Joe Adell?
So I have Joe Adell stuff, and as a prospect, I was all over him. I was like, all right, here he is. It's the next Mike Trout. That was the comp that everybody was making. And I was sipping the Kool-Aid. I was in. I was like, Joe Adell is sick. He's 19 years old and he's hitting balls 110 miles an hour and he flies around the base pass. He's a good outfielder. I was so in. I have a bunch of his cards. I'm going to be honest. I'm looking to sell. I am super, super nervous. Part of it, I think, is the mental side. I don't know if mentally he's ready to fail. And I think the Angels have to give him that chance to fail. Like you said, he should get 500 at bats this year. As crazy as it sounds for a guy as young as he is, this is kind of a make or break year. You have to figure out what kind of player Joe Adell is if you're the Angels moving forward, because he's kind of handcuffing you, because you've been like, well, we've got these young outfielders. Let's see before we put some guys around Mike Trout. You got to see what you got here with him. His price is just low right now, though. So that's the only thing that's hard to say to sell, is because everyone's down on him and how much lower can he really get? But if you can put that money into something better, I think that's the move. But if you're a Joe Adell guy, it's not going to get really much lower right now. A month from now, he could be saying something different.
Yeah, I think the best thing that needs to happen for him is Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani need to get hot. If they get hot, then suddenly no one's paying attention to what Joe Adell's doing over there in left field. No one's going to care if it's, hey, have an offer here and there. Just like you said, just get the playing time. He just needs that. He made a great catch on Sunday.
Yep.
Love to see that. I'm rooting for him. I'm really rooting for him. And I think the other thing for me is you cut Justin Upton.
Yeah.
For what reason? If you're not going to play Joe Adell, to play who was it that was
Jose
playing?
Rojas?
You cut Justin Upton to play Jose Rojas? No disrespect to Jose Rojas, but Joe Adell was sandwiched between Fernando Tatis and Vlad Jr. on top prospect lists. There's a reason you cut a guy who has got 350 major league home runs to make room for him. I think there's a lot of mismanagement going on with him right now.
Yeah, no, I think you have to give him the chance. This is something that, like, through my conversations with major league players, one in the Angels organization was there, Jabari Blash. Now, he was, of course, a fun little prospect too, never ended up panning out. Yeah. But one of the things that he talked about that's, I think, not talked about enough with players is it's really hard to get your chance and then sit. And then get your chance and then sit. And that's kind of what they're doing with Joe Adell. They're messing around with him. And the pressure is immense when you think you have that one game to show everything, to prove why you deserve to play the next day for a young guy who clearly seems like he might not be able to handle that load just yet. It's messed up. Let him be the left fielder. And if he sucks like Kelenic sucked last year, then you know that this is a real possibility that Joe Adell is not the guy. But if you're going to keep messing around with him, play him one day, not play him the next three. Play him one day, not play him the next three. Like, he's never going to be able to get in a rhythm. You're never going to be able to see what you have with him. So I hate it. I hate how they're handling him. It sucks because the talent is there, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, well, my hope is that if you're listening to this maybe a little later in the week, Wednesday, Thursday, he had three straight games where he batted he got a couple hits every game, and we're not worried about this. But yeah, right now it's a little frustrating. And you mentioned Seattle. It's funny that it's the GM of the former GM of the Angels up there in Seattle, and I think they're handling it the right way. Now, less expectations up there than what's going on in LA. But let the guys play. See what you got. Julio Rodriguez has been in the lineup pretty much every day since getting called up. See what you got there. Had a big hit this weekend. That's the way to do it, especially if you're a young organization. And frankly, I know the Angels see themselves as a team that's going to win the World Series with Trout and Ohtani, but they are in that same conversation as the Mariners, where they're a young team, mostly young team, that needs to play these guys and see what they have. They need to get out of that mindset of that they're the Dodgers, you know?
Like you said, no disrespect to Jose Rojas, but one guy could be the future, and one guy is a 4A player. He's a replacement player in his 30s. Like, there's ways that things need to be done. There's a process, and I don't understand what the Angels are doing.
Yeah, exactly. Apologies in advance to the Rojas family. I'm sure Jose's a very nice fella. Well, hey, Mark, this was a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate it. Actually, on the way out, we talked about all these breakout guys, bargain buys or guys buy in on. Anybody that we didn't talk about that is on your radar right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've been mostly on the prospect grind for like the cheaper stuff, as you saw with my YouTube video. All those guys I mentioned went up in price, so I can't mention those guys anymore as necessarily being the cheap options. But I do think that there's this guy in Washington. He's my favorite. His name's TJ White. He's a freak athlete. He's 18, 19 years old. He's a switch hitter, and he's just got crazy, crazy power potential. And there's one thing that the Nationals have done well. They figured out how to take these crazy good athletes in the outfield and make them really good. Now, I'm not going to say he's Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, because that's insane. I'm not nuts. But I do think that he has the opportunity to come up into the majors at some point in his career and make a pretty good impact. And the fact that he was drafted at 17, he's got all the time in the world. He's going to be young. He's got 3 years in the minors, 3 full years, and he'll be 20, 21 years old. So I really like TJ White. His price is a little bit higher now because I unfortunately inflated it. But I really like him. I really like him. And even like a guy, what was his name? Emmanuel Rodriguez on the Twins. Another dude. His price is actually still pretty cheap. I would take a look at him. But I don't know. There's so many great cards and so many great players out there that if there's someone like, just look at StatCast. That's kind of something I like to do. Yes. Go to Baseball Savant, look at barrels per plate appearance, and find the guys who do it a lot more than everybody else. Granted, you're still going to get strikeouts. You're still going to swing and misses like Bobby Dalbec. But every once in a while, you can find a little bit of a diamond in the rough there. And that could be the next guy who pops off for a big year. I mean, we knew Vlad Jr. had the hype, but he wasn't great the first 2 years. And then all of a sudden, he hit the ball in the air a little bit more. And he's the best player or one of the best offensive players in the league. So,
could not agree more. I kind of have the same strategy when it comes to baseball cards and fantasy baseball sleepers.
Yep.
Look at the batted ball rate. Look at the launch angles. Look at the exit velocity. Like you said, some guys aren't going to do it. But if you bet on 10 of them and maybe 5 of them hit, hey, that's a 50% is not too bad of a return on investment there. But, you know, hey, it sounds like TJ White, the next Stephen Kwan. The next Stephen Kwan. Hey, Mark, thanks so much again. Giraffe Neck Mark on YouTube. Giraffe Neck Cards. Check out the new channel. If you're into baseball cards, you're probably already subscribed to Mark's channel. If you're a baseball fan, some of the best stuff on YouTube. Mark, thanks so much for joining me.
Cody, thank you, man. I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun, and maybe we'll do it again down the line.
Would love to. Once again, a big thank you to Mark for joining me this week. Giraffe Neck Mark, that is the main channel, one of the best for baseball, YouTube, and of course, Giraffe Neck Cards, the brand new channel. Make sure to check it out. And of course, make sure to check us out, Mojo Break Media on YouTube. We post clips of this podcast, clips of the hype, and original videos every single week. So make sure to go over there, click that subscribe button, and like our videos for more baseball card and sports content and much, much more. And of course, if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, Mojo Break Sports Card Show, make sure to subscribe. You get new episodes of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks every Tuesday and new episodes of our flagship show, The Hype, every Thursday. I'm Cody Pasby. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next time.